Tonight, this is not Z88, and this is not safe for the little ears, all right? And I say that with all seriousness, and I'm glad to see there's not a lot of little ears in this place. There are parts of Scripture that are not designed for the little ears. God designs Scripture to speak to the lives of humanity, and we have, across the board, things we have to deal with. And I'm not on the stage tonight to be PG-13 or R-rated for the sake of doing it to shock the world. I'm going to read stuff directly out of Scripture that has the word breasts in it several times. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, we're going to deal with stuff because God deals with stuff. And when we start watching two lovers engage with one another, there comes a time where they start engaging with one another in ways that is for adult ears only. So tonight we made it PG-13, and if you're listening to the podcast, this is not safe for the little ears, because tonight we deal with adult themes and we watch what God calls us into as adults, into the covenant of marriage and into a love relationship that is extraordinary in every way. So I will do all that I can to keep things as non-graphic as possible, but there's only so much I can do because it's right here and you're going to see it in a second. And as we dig into this, my hope tonight for all of us is that we would fall more deeply in love with the God we serve, that He is willing to deal with us on such raw and wonderful things, and that we would fall more deeply in love with the covenant of marriage and its holiness and its beauty and its passion and its perfect essence that God has created, and that we would fall more in love with our spouses tonight, those of us that are in the marriage covenant as well. We are in the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs. This is King Solomon, one of the greatest songwriters of all time, wrote over 1,000 songs, and this is his Song of Songs, the best he's got. And it's about the love relationship between a man and a woman, and the journey that they go through from meeting to marriage, to consummation of marriage, to the wonder beyond marriage. And we are going to jump right in and spend some time there. So if you would turn with me in our Bibles to Song of Solomon, chapter 3, page 472 of our Bibles. They're under the seats if you don't have one of your own. And if you do, it's Song of Songs, chapter 3. We're going to step in there. If you've been with us the last few weeks, you've picked up as we've gone the incredible dialogue that's going on between the man and the woman, and the longing that we see happening, the dreaming that we see happening, this woman who can't wait for her groom to take her and hold her and protect her and just absolutely engulf her. And this groom that can't wait to come and steal his bride away and run away with her and invade her and take her and love her and protect her and enjoy her. And we've seen the longing between the two. Today, we step into a whole new world. And check this out, right? So we left off last week with the verse 5 of chapter 3, "Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awake in love until it so desires." Up to now, it stays right there, right here, all right? Doesn't go past this. A longing, a dreaming, nothing more. And in verse 6, something magical happens. The woman says to her friends, "Who is this coming up from the desert like a column of smoke? Perfumed with myrrh and incense, made from all the spices of the merchant." Who is this coming? They're standing in the desert place, in the place where she shepherds, and they look out into the distance, and from the distance, plumes of smoke start coming over the hills. It's a spectacle. It's something you can see from a distance. And in these plumes of smoke, as she recognizes and realizes what this is, and she says to her friends, "Who is this coming? Not only are there plumes of smoke, but do you smell that in the air? I mean, every fragrance from every merchant is in the air right now. It is as though this some big event is about to take place." And then she says, "Look! Exclamation mark! It is Solomon's carriage, escorted by 60 warriors, the noblest of Israel, all of them wearing the sword, all experienced in battle, each with his sword at his side, prepared for the terrors of the night. Remember, this is a poem, and it is a song, and I love the way she puts this. She says, my king is coming, my love is coming, and he comes ready. He comes protected. He has brought with him to me all that is at his disposal. He has held nothing back. Listen to this, guys. David only had 30 great warriors who protected him. Solomon has 60. I mean, these are the noblest warriors. This is the special ops guys. These guys can handle a sword like nobody else. And what does she say about them? I want you to know something about the guards that guard my king, that they are ready for the terrors of the night. See, her man comes with his arsenal, and he says, when you find yourself with me, you will be in the world where everything that is at my disposal will protect us. What an incredible, wonderful thought a woman experiences when her mighty warrior comes. She says, King Solomon made for himself the carriage. Now, I love that little line that's put in there, okay? Because, listen, this carriage that he's coming in is not any carriage. It's not just something that he found in the garage or one of his best carriages even. He didn't even go out and say, I'm going to find the best I've got. What did he do with this one? He had this made for this occasion. See, what she's beginning to say is, if you want any idea of how deeply special I am, this thing coming down here is coming for me, and it is designed for me. This is an incredible thing. King Solomon made for himself the carriage. He made it of wood from Lebanon, which, just so you guys know, the best wood you could find in the known world during this time was from Lebanon. It was a rare wood, and when you made an entire carriage out of wood from Lebanon, it did not come cheap, all right? It was very expensive. Its posts he made of silver, its base of gold. Now, you can imagine, I just want you guys to understand, this poetry is meant to paint a picture, all right? So you're sitting in this place, and over the hills comes this entourage. And this entourage comes, and it is your king, your groom, coming to get you. You see the smoke, you see the carriage, you see the warriors. The carriage you can see from a distance with its deep Lebanese wood, its gold and silver pillars, and here it comes. And she says, look at this, she says, its seat was upholstered with purple, its interior lovingly inlaid by the daughters of Jerusalem. Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. Purple. You guys go, well, that's the royal color. Absolutely, it is. But here's why purple became the royal color. There is a flower where they extracted the purple dye from to dye materials purple. And that flower was so rare in the ancient world that a purple upholstery like this was more precious, more expensive than the gold and silver that was on the posts and the Lebanese wood put together. That was like the crowning jewel of this entire thing. And she says, it goes so far that the interior, which you won't even see, he has put all of his effort into that, and the daughters of Jerusalem, those women, those people that have been with me, they went and they decked that puppy out. I mean, they know exactly what I love. And he called them together and he said, daughters of Jerusalem, here's my new carriage, make it special for her. Oh, this guy is still really wise. It's no wonder they call him the wisest man that ever lived, because he sure gets a woman's heart in many ways. Watch this. She says, come out, you daughters of Zion, same thing as Jerusalem, Zion and Jerusalem, interchangeable, and look at King Solomon wearing the crown which with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, the day his heart rejoiced. So what do we find out at the end of this little passage? What is he wearing? It's not a trick question. It's a crown. He's wearing the crown that his mother made for him for what? The day of his wedding. She made it specially for the day of his joy, right? And what has he been crying out all of Song of Solomon? Oh, the longing. Oh, the desire. Oh, come with me now. Let's forget the wedding. Let's elope. Let's go. Come with me. I mean, this man, the day of his joy is when he comes and gets his bride. And she says, look at Solomon. Look, look what he's wearing. He's wearing the crown that his mom made for him for our wedding day. What does that mean we're about to experience? The wedding day! I mean, listen, folks, this is the moment that everything has been waiting for, everything's been longing for. He's been waiting, she's been waiting, and she sees him coming down here with the best of the best, ready to come and take his bride, and he's wearing the crown that his mom made for him on his wedding day for his day of joy, and she goes, girls, come around, it's wedding day! And boy, is it going to be a celebration. And on that wedding day, as he enters in, think about the mindset in which he has prepared his bride to be in. I come with the best that I've got. I bring it all to the table, all for you. I bring the best warriors, the best stuff, all my resources poured in for one exclusive means to tell you that you mean something to me. What an extraordinary way to walk into the woman's life. And as though that were not enough, we find out here in chapter 4, as they meet together for their wedding day, as they stand together preparing to consummate in this beautiful wedding, listen to this. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Look at verse 7 for a second in that same chapter, chapter 4. All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. See, Solomon does this when he's writing this poetry. He bookmarks a particular section with the same statement both sides to say, I'm starting here to tell you something. I'm ending here to say the same thing. And the in-between is the description of what I'm saying. Solomon had a way with words, didn't he? He was a songwriter. And when he came together, he said, now, before we go ahead and get married, I got some talking to do. I want to tell you something. Look at this. Oh, how beautiful you are, my darling. Verse 1, oh, how beautiful. Now, he starts in poetry. Remember, in this song, he wants to draw us into a picture now. He wants us to experience what he's experiencing. He wants us to walk into the experience that he's about to have. So what you've got to do now is you've got to follow his eyes, all right? Because his eyes are going to follow his woman now, is going to follow his bride, and he's going to describe things for us. And we need to follow his eyes with him. He says, your eyes behind your veil are doves. Where does he begin? He looks her right in the eye, and he says to her, oh, your eyes are like doves behind that veil. I can see them. Now, the veil was designed to hide the face, right? So can he actually see the eyes? I would go with probably not really, but man, it doesn't matter because he can see them, can't he? Because he stared into them before. It is her eyes that had won his heart. So he's staring straight through the veil. She can see him. And he says to her, oh, I can see your eyes. And they're like doves behind that veil. And her heart starts throbbing. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Now, again, we just got to run into this for a second. Generally, if you describe your wife's hair as a flock of goats, I'm going to run with probably thinking up something different. I've got some suggestions after service if you'd like them. But this one in this time would have meant the world to her. Here's why. Because the goats from Mount Gilead would come with black, deep black wool. And remember, she's the one that started this whole song out saying, I spend my days in the sun, my body is ragged, I'm too tan, my hair is never kept well. I mean, the whole deal, she's like, I'm just not what you need. I mean, all those women you spend your time with in the temple and in the palace, I mean, yeah, no, they're so put together, and here I am. And he says, oh, honey, listen, your hair, when it falls down over your shoulders, it is so deep and black and beautiful. It's like the goats and the sheep from that mountain where they come from, where they're black. It's awesome. And she goes, wow, look at that. Now, I love this. This is a little odd. I give it to you. But she says, your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn coming up from the washing.
You got white teeth, kiddo. It's beautiful. I mean, you got some seriously white teeth, okay? So where does he start? He starts with the eyes, right? He looks up at the hair, and now he comes down to the teeth, right? And he gets to the teeth, and he says this, not one of them is alone. Each has its twin. Wow. I mean, whoo, pitter-patter, my heart's beating. Let me just tell you something. It was incredibly rare in that day and time for people to have all their teeth. I know that sounds weird, but if you go to the third world, even today, one of the things you'll notice when you travel into the third world is most people's teeth are bad. They do not brush their teeth. They do not keep their teeth. They do not live in America where you have dentists that tell you to do that all the time. So to bump into somebody that not only has beautiful white teeth, but they're all there, I mean, that was huge. It was huge. And he's going, I want you to know, I noticed. I mean, your teeth are all there. There's no one better in the kingdom than you. You got all your teeth. It's unbelievable. And you see what he's beginning to do? He's beginning to say to her, I get that you're insecure about your looks, but listen, everything you need is right there, and it is incredibly hot. I mean, I love it. It's amazing. And look at this. He says, your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Now, up to now, what is he describing? He is describing purely physical attributes, right? He's saying, I just want you to know your eyes are amazing, your hair's amazing, your teeth are amazing, your lips are amazing. And now you guys can feel it because you're adults. We start getting into lips, it starts getting a little hotter, right? I mean, you know, the eyes are cool, the hair's fine, you get the teeth a little weird, but the lips, you go, whoa, the lips, we're into lips, this is good, we're getting somewhere. And then he jumps into the temples or the cheeks, depending on how you... Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Yeah. Okay, I don't know if you've ever seen a pomegranate, but a pomegranate has a rich, deep red color. And remember, her biggest fear is that she is too dark for him, that his people won't accept her and that her people won't accept him. And she fears that to an extent. And he says to her, oh, let me tell you what kind of skin I would like personally. It's something like a pomegranate. I mean, that deep red, it's just glowing. It's beautiful. And if you've ever seen a bride at her wedding, there is a glow about her that seems to radiate from the face. And he says, I see it in you. I see it in you. You are unbelievably beautiful. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. Now, just want you to know, we know nothing about the Tower of David, oddly enough. Done the research, nothing out there about it. But we assume that it was either a tower built by David, a tower where the shields of men in fallen battle had put their shields on there, and it was a monument of sorts, or it was built by Solomon as a monument to his dad. But it was clearly something well known in that time, saying, like the Tower of David with all the thousands of shields that hang on it, so elegant is your neck, so perfect, so strong, so beautiful is your neck. And then he says this, your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browses among the lilies. Okay, so let's just follow the eyes, right? We go eyes, we go hair, we go teeth, we go lips, we hit the neck. The neck is a hot zone. You know that because even in our culture, that's a place you tend not to try to go until you're married because it leads to other things. And when you move from the neck down, the next thing you hit is the breasts. And he goes, woman, your breasts are amazing. I mean, there's two of them. They're like twins and they're unbelievable. And he says, listen to this. He says, they are like twin fawns of a gazelle. This is kind of weird language, but again, in this culture, in this time, fawns were these young little goats that would run, and they were perky and unbelievable and sweet. And he looks at her breasts and he says, your breasts are like those two fawns, man. Now, I want to say something very interesting here, because it's the details that matter in this, and I mean this sincerely. This is not just to be funny. He stops there. That's as far as the description goes. There is a point that he gets to, and it's just too much for him. And he's like, I'm going to stay with the breasts. I'm going to stay right there. Watch this. He says, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, that's a description for all night long, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. You can put two and two together, okay? There's two mountains, one myrrh, one incense, and he just talked about the two gazelles, so we're still in the breasts. And he says, all beautiful you are, my darling, there is no flaw in you. So this is the deal, man. He starts at the top, he speaks to the woman's eyes, he speaks to her heart, he speaks to her physical beauty, and he starts working himself into sexuality, right? He moves into the lips, then he gets to the neck. She's starting to get excited. He's starting to get excited. He gets to the breasts, and he can't go any further. He's like, that's where I stop. That's where I'm going to stay for the night. And that's exactly what he said. And I tell you, this should speak so deeply to us, both men and women, to the incredible importance of learning to communicate verbally and with body language and with our heart and soul the beauty that we see in our spouse. We need to learn to communicate to them, you are beautiful, you are flawless, and I think that what you have is unbelievable. And when you get down to some of the physical areas that in the Christian church we tend to leave alone, you need to talk more about those than anything else to compensate for being a Christian. That's what you should do. Because we are so conservative so often, and God says, I wrote it in the book. The power of a woman's breast stop a man right where he stands. It's right there. I'm not kidding. This is biblical. And God says, I want you to understand that as you walk into a man's life, woman, that you hold him captive with your body and with your beauty and with who you are and with what he sees in you. And it doesn't matter how you shape up, your husband, your lover will find the beauty in you. God designed us men that way. He designed us not to care so much about the size and the shape and the this and the that, but just to be obsessed with the beauty of a woman. That's why the perversion of sexuality is so prevalent. That's why things like pornography work, because we are obsessed with the range of everything. And we are particularly obsessed with the physical parts of a woman that are supposed to be hidden, especially her breasts. It is what it is. We are designed that way. And the power and beauty of that within the marriage covenant is designed for us. And it is both the power of the man and the power of the woman to come together and make each other's hearts soar. Now, he changes his tune here and switches from this physical description into a sexual description, starting to say, I want in and I want in now. I want to spend the night in between your breasts. And he says this, come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Descend from the crest of Amana, from the top of Senir, the summit of Hermon, from the lion's dens and the mountain haunts of the leopards. Now, that's an interesting description. Let me tell you what's happening here. Immediately, Solomon changes his tune to his wife, and he's kind of halfway through describing her beauty. He gets captivated by her breasts and starts getting all sexual on her, and he realizes, oh, got to regroup, got to get back to her heart first, got to work on the inside before we get to the outside. And he says, whoa, stop here for a second. I want you to come out of the mountains with me, out of the mountains of Lebanon. There was a mountain range that headed from all the way north in Israel, coming through Israel from Lebanon. And that mountain range was known in this culture as a very dangerous, very difficult place. There were lions' dens up there. There were leopards up there. If you went into the mountains, it was cold, it was dreary, it was difficult, it was tragic. People died there. And he says to her, I have come to take you from all of the dangers of your life, all of the worries you have, all of the struggles you experience, all of the things that you fear, every lion's den, every leopard that will attack you. Do you see the 60 warriors around me who are ready for the terrors of the night? And I am here to take you from that place and take you home with me. This was a description of him reminding the woman of his dreams. This ain't just about the physical, honey. This is about me wanting to be your knight in shining armor and wanting me to take you and take you home with me and protect you from the lions and the leopards. And there is no faster way to a woman's heart to awaken love in her than to remind her that you are her knight in shining armor and that you will die to protect her. And that there is no lion or leopard you will not battle on her behalf.
and there's no resource you have at your disposal that you will not bring to bear for her heart. And do you see what Solomon's doing here? He is going back and forth. She experiences him coming down as a warrior. He describes her beauty to her. He leads it into sexuality to awaken in her things that she cannot awaken herself. And then he goes right back to, don't worry, we're not there yet. Let's hold. Guys, it is so important that you win the heart of your woman before you start acting all sexual. And we guys are so obsessed with the sexuality of our relationship that we often bypass that, and our woman does not awaken love in her the way she can or ought because we have not awakened it in her. And Solomon says, this is a constant, delicate combination of communication to your love to awaken in her love. Be very careful that you don't fall into the perversions of sexuality by driving to where the culture tells us. Hey, just get sexual and she'll get there. No! You continually communicate to her heart, which is a constant combination of communicating the love you have for her, the beauty that she is, the sexuality you experience in her, and the warrior heart in you that's ready to protect her. And you whisper those things to her, and you don't get to do that in 5 minutes. That takes days, sometimes weeks, to just whisper to your wife, oh, I'm so there for you. Watch this. He says in verse 9, you have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. Of course, my sister there would be odd to us, but in the Eastern culture here, Middle Eastern culture, to call your bride your sister was very common. It was an endearing term to your wife to say, you are my sister now, my family now. Remember, family was a huge deal in this culture and being tied together. And he says, you have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. And remember again, the terms here, with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace, these are all terms that deal with the love relationship, the physical love relationship that creates the longing within each of them. And he says, listen, your eyes are so unbelievable that when you looked at me the first time, I was done. I was done. And that your neck and the jewel on your neck, you just needed one and it was over for me. For a woman that would adorn herself to try to win a man, he says to her, forget the adorning, single jewel on the neck and I was sold. You had me at jewel one. And that's what he's saying to her. And again, you see what he's doing here. He goes from physical beauty to sexual awakening, back to I'm your warrior, back to you've won my heart. You own me. You have me. There is no one else. There is nothing else. Guys, what you're starting to understand here is that a woman thinks on 95 levels simultaneously. When a woman is with you, you are the last thing on her mind most of the time until you begin to bring together her whole world. And you say, whatever's on that mind of yours, I'm going to draw it all into me right here, okay? So, are you insecure about how you look and how you feel? Done. You're beautiful. I love everything about you. And you drive me nuts sexually. Whoa, got it. Okay, and you're a little worried about whether I'm going to protect you? I'm going to protect you. And you're a little worried about whether I love you? I love you. You're a little worried about whether I'm distracted by some faint memory of the past? You won me with your eyes. You had me at jewel one. I mean, I'm so captivated by you, I couldn't leave if I wanted to. You see what he's doing? He is quickly putting together each insecurity of the woman's heart and bringing it together because God designed us men to be captivated by the beauty of our woman. And he designed the woman to be captivated by the strength of her man. And when those two things are there, it is an extraordinary explosion of passion. And God designed it that way. Now watch what he does. He says, with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace, how delightful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much more pleasing is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your perfume than any spice. Again, coming from a man that has tasted every wine and smelled every spice, these are the words that make a woman's heart soar. And then he says this. He changes now. He goes back to where he left off before Lebanon, right? He started getting her going, got caught up in the breasts, moved on to Lebanon, and now watch what he does. He gets back to the lips. Your lips drop sweetness as the honeycomb, my bride. Milk and honey are under your tongue. This is not normal lip talk, okay? He's back in the tongue now. You're back in kissing. You're back in love. You're back in that place where you're like, I mean, under your tongue is honey and milk, and your lips drip the honeycomb. These are all references to the promised land, all references that speak to the promise of God and also speak to the wonder and beauty of that promise, saying all that you will ever desire is in the kisses of your beautiful woman. And he says to her, your kisses are like the promised land to me, man. I mean, when I lay in my bed at night, all I can think about is kissing you. Do you see how magically he does this? He seems to find the balance between being just sexual enough where she is awakened, but just beautiful enough where she doesn't feel used. And it is a delicate balance, guys, but it is a balance we have to master the art of. Otherwise, our wives will feel one or the other. We will never truly awaken them because we're too conservative and too afraid. Or we will make them feel used because we're too sexual and too driven. And somewhere in the middle is a beautiful place where both come together. And then he says this. He says after the lips, you are a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain. This is an incredible statement. It's beautiful. Because in this time, in this culture, and may I say, in the culture of God, there is such value placed on the fact that a man and a woman have saved themselves physically and sexually for the one that God has designed them for. And he says to her, I want you to know something, that I know that you have locked up your garden waiting for me to come and awaken it. I have heard and I understand that you have not allowed anyone into your garden because it is my garden. And he values this so deeply in her, and he raises her up for it, and he says to her, I want you to know, that makes me feel so incredibly secure in you, and I love you. For those of you sitting in the room tonight that do not yet have a spouse, and here we are talking about the marriage day and all that, yes, I hear you. It's not the easiest thing in the world, because it's all this stuff, and you can't do it, right? But listen, the value in this moment, in this little piece, is extraordinary. God throws this in there as he's describing to his spouse, to this beautiful bride that's going to be his, and he says, I want you to know something. It is so deeply valuable to me that I know that you locked yourself away just for me. Men, women, listen to me. If you are single and you are not married, the deep value that God has placed in the freedom of the covenant of marriage for you to hold yourself locked up from anyone other than the one that God will bring to you as your spouse is an incredibly deeply valued thing and incredibly freeing. And our culture tells us the opposite. It tells us that you have to be willing to go places to get love. Ladies, especially you will give out sexuality to receive love, and men will often give love to receive sexuality. Be very cautious. Until a guy is willing to put one of these on your finger, I would be very cautious on anything he wants from you that is anything sexual or physical, because he has forgotten himself. And guys, women that are willing to give themselves to you freely, you need to ask yourself the question, when does that change? You see, when you walk into a relationship with either a woman that gives herself freely away or a man that takes what he wants when he wants, you have to ask yourself, when does that change? And the fact is, it does not change if it has not changed. If you are here today and you are single and you are not a virgin, let me tell you something about the beauty of God. Being a virgin for your future spouse is as much a physical issue as it is an issue of the heart. And though I will tell you that if you are not a virgin when you get married, there is baggage that comes with that. And there is a price to pay for that. Wish I could tell you it could all go away. It doesn't. It's okay. One thing I can tell you, that if you get your heart right now and you say, I will lock up my garden until such a time that I find my spouse, that locking up produces this same wonder in a man or woman's heart. To know that you decided one day you were done with that is huge. So if you are single here and you have not given yourself away to another, please, I ask you, from my heart to yours, hang in there. Hold on, because someday there will be a man or a woman that will say to you, I know that your garden is locked up for me, and I can't wait for it to be awakened. And if you are here today and you have stepped into a relationship physically and you are no longer a virgin, decide tonight, not tomorrow, not next week, tonight, you're done with that story. Because it is an issue of the heart. And if you say, I'll decide tomorrow, your heart is not where it needs to be and you have forgotten the beauty and wonder of the freedom of Christ. There is great value in that. If you guys are engaged and you're not married yet, I've said this before, over 50% of engagements never make it to marriage. Woo! Of course, that wouldn't be you. That would never be you because you're so in love, right? Just like the other 50% were as well. But far more importantly than that, listen carefully to me. If you are in an engaged relationship and you are giving yourselves away to each other physically, you are sexually engaged with one another, I just want you to know that it deeply undermines the value of the marriage covenant because you are telling your spouse, you're telling your future spouse, before we're in covenant relationship, I'm willing to run with you. Your spouse needs to know from you, ladies, that you are locked away for the covenant of marriage and for Christ, not just for him. And men, your spouse needs to know that you are the kind of strength that will stand firm for the things of God before you get married. It undermines both those things, and when you walk into marriage, trust me when I tell you, it creates a mess. And there's a lot of reasons why, and we'll discuss them later. Okay, so where are we? It gets good. Watch this. You are a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain. Your plants are an orchard of pomegranates. And now he gets carried away, okay? This is the moment where he goes, I don't know what else to say. I'm just throwing the whole arsenal at you. Here we go. Watch this. Your plants are an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, with henna, with nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with every kind of incense tree, with myrrh, with aloes, with all the finest spices. You are a garden fountain, a well of flowing water streaming down from Lebanon. Do you see what he did? He's like, he doesn't even know what to say anymore. He's like, there is nothing on the planet that is as good as you. And guys, if you do not get that excited about your wife on occasion, she's going to have to start wondering what's wrong with you. You ought to be that excited about her where you don't even have words anymore. And this verse 15 is beautiful. You are a garden fountain. Remember, he talked about the garden. Now he says the garden fountain. He says a well of flowing water or living water. The living water was the purest kind. And he says to her, when you come down, your love is so refreshing to me. It is like living water pouring over me. Streaming down from Lebanon. And after his crazy excitement, his unbelievable words, he's cherishing of her heart, he's speaking of her eyes, he's deeply connecting to her heart, he's becoming her warrior, and he's awakening enough sexuality in her that she's getting excited, then these words burst forth from her mouth. Awake, north wind, and come, south wind. Blow on my garden, that its fragrance may spread abroad. Let my lover come into his garden and taste its choice fruits. In case you're confused, she is inviting him into her bed, into her body, and to enjoy her fully. She is saying to him, I am all yours. Now, this is an interesting point, and I just want to make this again. The Song of Songs began with the voice of a woman, not a man. And here again, it is not the man walking in to take sexuality. It is the woman inviting him into sexuality. It's an interesting point. We live in a culture that we think biblically God said the man has to initiate sexuality. And there is truth in that, in this sense, that the man has to prepare the way. But we have confused that with the issue that the man is supposed to take what he wants when he wants it. That will never win a woman's heart. The man is to pave the way to the point where his wife goes, enough, come. That's how it's supposed to be. She is supposed to be so driven by what she's hearing that she wants nothing more than for her husband to enter into the garden and taste of his choice fruits. Now, in a world we live in, sexuality does not always play out that way, does it? There are some days where you just got to tolerate the fact that your wife says, I'm not in the mood, but, you know, I love you. So let's go ahead and make love. And that's okay. But if that is the always, all the time pattern in your marriage, you guys have got some serious work to do. Men, you've got some serious work to do. You have got to inspire your woman into giving herself to you at least some of the time. And ladies, the beautiful gift that you're given to invite your husband into the garden is a gift God intended for you to hold and to give on a regular basis, to say, here, you are my strong place. You are my man. You are my protection. You are with me. Come into my garden. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. I'm not even going to go into that. There's so much here. But I will say one thing, all right? This creates a place for us, Christians especially, to understand that sexuality within the marriage is supposed to be an experience of exploration and wonder, an experience of running with each other into the beauty of love, of passionately finding ourselves in places we can't begin to imagine because we are so drunk on one another's love. And that is what it's supposed to be. If your sexual relationship with your spouse is monotone, it's a single tone that runs and it's the same every single time, I've got some books I can recommend because you got to spice it up. I mean, when you're done, you got to say things like this. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh and my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. I can't think of anything left. It's done. And those references, again, all the way from the kissing of the mouth and the honey under the tongue, all the way into the sexuality of the breasts, moving into the garden and enjoying and experiencing sexuality in every way. We are free in marriage to enjoy one another intimately, emotionally, intellectually, physically. It is an experience. It is a combination. It is a wonder. And it only happens when everything from tonight's message is brought into the single place where we go, here we go. If you've done your job, men, your wife is going to go, come in. And if she's doing her job, you're going to go in and you're going to drink until you're drunk on her love. The friends say, eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers. I mean, at this point, it's so exciting that even the friends are going, man, drink it up. Stay in there all night. Don't come out. We don't want to see you. In fact, make it two nights. Stay three. You guys, we live in a world that is supposed to be a beautiful place in marriage to enjoy each other holistically and completely. And you live in a world that has perverted that completely. And many of you sit here tonight, and though we laugh and though we enjoy the preaching, we go home tonight and there's such baggage in our marriages and such baggage in our sexuality that we don't even know where to begin. I understand that. This is not easy. And sexuality does not just awaken itself tomorrow and everything's fine. This is going to take effort and work. It's going to take time. But listen, if I can do anything for you tonight, I would do this. Make sure that in your marriages, if your sexual relationship does not sound like anything we've just read, that you start talking about it. You start researching it. You start reading about it. Come to people like myself or others that you trust and say, don't know how to have sex real well. Please help me. This is the church, folks. We're supposed to be able to talk about this stuff, but we hide this stuff because we're embarrassed. What are you embarrassed about? We're adults in this room. If you're married, you're probably having sex. Get used to it. So am I. Right.
So the fact of the matter is, since we all know we're doing it, we may as well talk about it, right? Come on. And the fact is, in the church, we don't, because somehow we think that's some sacred place we can't go. So all of us have these dreary sexual relationships, and we read stuff like this and go, wow, that would be kind of cool. Well, let me tell you something. The stuff that's in Song of Solomon is very possible and very real. And not just for newlyweds, it's for the whole ball game. And if you're not experiencing that, man, it's time to start talking. It's time to start reading. It's time to start learning. So let's learn together. Let's talk together. Let's figure this out together, because there's more to come in this book. We haven't even gotten started. But let me tell you something. In this beautiful place where the two are now married and say, let's enjoy one another, it starts a love relationship that bursts into passion and is a consuming, absolutely drunken experience. And I don't mean on wine. I just mean on love that is just like, whoa, we're just lost in one another. You were designed for that. And if you wait, if you do not awaken love until it is ready, when you do, you will say, come north wind, come south wind and blow, and awaken love. And it will be beautiful. And it will be everything it was meant to be. When you walk out these doors, wherever you're at, in your sexual relationship, husbands and wives, start talking. If your sexuality is silent once in a while, that's cool. If your sexuality is silent all the time, start gabbing, okay? Talk before, talk after, talk during, figure out, explore, learn, read, question. You are meant to experience one another. And if you're here and you're not married and you are engaging in sexuality, the switches are turning on, ding, ding, ding. Don't really care if you're actually having intercourse or not. If you're gauging in sexuality, stop it. You are killing yourself and you are killing your marriage, whatever that future holds. Stop now. Talk to someone or get married. Get it done. Move on. But just don't engage in it before you're married. I think on that note, we should pray.